Hello, and welcome to a very special Roll for Topic. This week, we're going to be designing a dungeon on air. So this is something that we did last year, 2 years ago? I think it was last year. It ended up being a lot of fun. So the idea is that we are going to build the dungeon today, and then in a couple weeks or so, I'm actually going to run the dungeon as like an actual play episode. So if you are uninterested in either of those things, just skip this episode and the next one, and we'll see you in the new year. But I think it'll be pretty fun. So today you have me, Chris Salzman. Andy Rao is going to be here as well.
Yep.
Kyle Latino.
Hello, this is the sound of my voice.
Yes, and John Corey.
Aloha.
Hello. All right, folks. So before we started all this, I promised you, I made you sign like a blood oath document that you would not brainstorm ahead of time. So I trust that you all did that you did not brainstorm.
I stopped thinking entirely for the last week.
That's great.
Have to have a brain to brainstorm.
Yeah.
So the intent is we are going to take like an hour and a half or so, and we're going to design a dungeon that can be run in about 2 hours or so. That's what I want. Kyle has indicated offline that he does not care about what I need to do. so we're gonna see how the thing ends
up.
But
I think invite Kyle on here?
I think about it.
Yeah.
I'm like a reverse vampire. I can only show up to things that I haven't been invited to.
Oh, nice. Geez.
Hey, there's a good D&D monster right there.
There's our boss at the end.
Yeah.
This thing writes itself.
Did anyone try inviting it?
So the idea of it, Chris, though, is that not only are we going to design this dungeon, but we plan to run this on the air, mm-hmm. so to speak, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So it's got to be somewhat, not tight, but like it's got to be like pretty directed and pretty self-contained too. I think it would be lovely too if this thing could be taken and someone else can run it in their own campaign as well. Not that we're expecting like everybody to download it and run it or anything like that, but something that's interesting that you can sort of drop in. So I think like the last one that we all did was it all happened in sort of like a tavern that was in the middle of the wasteland somewhere, so you could really just take that and drop it in wherever you wanted. Mm-hmm. So this is not like the second act dungeon in some big campaign. It's like a one-off. All right, does that all make sense? And then I think the other thing is that I wanted to do, probably just stick with D&D, right? I think we're all somewhat familiar with that. Does that, any objections?
No, that sounds good. D&D is a pretty portable to
smart,
a lot
would
of
do
other stuff.
Cyberpunk. So.
Yeah. If we wanted to, yeah. The less said about that, probably the better. But
so, last year we ended up with kind of a mini dungeon or a side trick sort of thing. It was maybe mm-hmm. a half dozen or so encounter areas. Would you mm-hmm. say? Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then did an Alexa just pop in to say hi?
And Alexa just popped in. Okay. My son has an Alexa in his room, and he's discovered that even though it is after his bedtime, he can still use this voice to send broadcasts to other rooms.
Okay. So. All right. Yeah. So I'm going to write down that we need to have a fantasy Alexa.
I think those are just called stones of far speech, but
yeah.
Yeah. Palantirs.
Yes. Yeah. Andy, so you actually ended up, you ran that dungeon last year. Is there anything that you're like, oh wow, we should not do that again?
Last year we created a dungeon that had a pretty unique architecture to it. Mm-hmm. And that was really fun to think up, but mm-hmm. That is a challenge to communicate in an online mm-hmm. game. Okay. So maybe if we could err a little bit on the side of keeping the geography something that is easily explainable without mm-hmm. like a diagram.
Yeah.
But some diagram is, I mean, it has to be cool, a dungeon or adventure, so some weirdness is fun.
Okay, well, that's actually good. So that's a good constraint to have. Yeah, well, let's kind of dive in and start thinking about what sort of thing that we want to make, I guess, right? So, like Kyle, you mentioned cyberpunk, I guess. Is there anything else that's on people's minds these days?
I'm a fan of the very, I don't want to say very traditional, but the traditional sort of lost tomb, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like not a wizard's tower, not a the basement of an old castle, but like an actual lost tomb of some forgotten god or something.
Ooh. Forgotten god, like not a hero, but some sort of deity.
Yeah, I'm open either way, but something weird.
So something maybe like that's leaving, it's been disturbed in some way, and now it's like leaving the tomb and snatching people or items and then like going back.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So I like while we're throwing out stuff that's just on our mind, we don't have to pack this all into the adventure, but I think it would be fun to come up with a, you know, if we're going to do this tomb, an unexpected place or context in which you would find the tomb. So I don't know, the middle of a bustling city or something like that. You know, yeah. It doesn't have to be a city.
Actually, that was the first thing when you said that. That's the first thing that popped into my head is I was just reading a history blog and it was like, oh, a mosaic floor from 5th century Rome was found under somebody's when they were building a new house.
Oh.
You know, and yeah. So something like that where it's somebody's doing something very common and they unearth something absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. It's like this will not be the last time that we reference Indiana Jones, but like when he's in the library, like opening up the floor, slamming it open.
What a scene with like the stamp, the book stamp librarian.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's this also calls to mind, Kyle, you probably know about this, in Final Fantasy VI, the ghost train.
Scene. Oh, I love the ghost train.
Yeah, but like thinking about like the thought of the, if we go with the tomb idea, like the tomb sort of coming, like showing up, just like as the party's doing something normal, right? So they're in a bustling city, and maybe they go to the town square, and then all of a sudden they're in the tomb, or like the tomb is around them in some way. Yeah.
Oh, that really got an idea for me. What if they're in a bustling city that's on the remains of an older city, and the tomb is them stepping through time?
Oh.
Like, they go to a tomb.
So it's like in their nightmares or something? Like, every time they rest in the town, they actually end up in this dungeon or something?
Oh, my gosh. That would be pretty fantastic. But I was thinking, like, they go into, like, the old library, and when they look out, they're not in the city that they thought they were in.
Oh, yeah.
But they now have to get out through this old library.
I really like that. Yeah. So, the resolution for that dungeon ride is just sort of getting back to where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be something that, I mean, maybe that's up for the DM to sort of decide, but that the party knows that they're going to go into it all, or there's any sort of rumor, or is it just you have sprung it on them?
Well, you know me.
Yeah, I know you. Yeah.
So, guys, can you recap the last 30 seconds for me? I had to step aside to yank my son's Alexa out of the wall socket. To go
ahead, guys. Throw it out the window.
Yeah. So, John was pitching that, like, you're inside of a bustling city, and, like, you enter the library or enter some sort of inn, something like that, and then you go to, like, look out the window, and you realize that everything has sort of changed and gone back in time. So, like, sort of like a city underneath a city.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, yep.
That's a pretty good setup, right? Like, so that gets you sort of into the dungeon, right? But then, like, what thematically would, like, why that setup? That's the other thing. Like, because you go back in time to, like, right some sort of wrong or to bring something back.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Or just to... realm or this,
ooh.
Yeah.
What's the light... What is the inner light? Is that the Next Generation episode? And it's just like, it's just to be remembered?
Yes.
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 Yep.
And what that would go, oh, that would go well with like a tune.
Picard gets the flute.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He gets like this mind probe makes him like live like this whole different life on
this
other planet. Yeah.
In an alien civilization. And then when he wakes up, the whole point was that he just remember that this civilization knew it was going to die. And the only way they could think to be remembered was to put the whammy on Picard. And then he would live this life and know what their civilization was like and then come back to the present and not have PSD.
Right.
PTSD.
Well, he had the arts to like assuage him. Like that's how he dealt with it. And he did carry that flute with them for a long time, and like it came up in other episodes, but what if that could be something like that would be cool because you could have like suddenly you're in you go into this library or this temple or whatever, and suddenly there's a bunch of people that run in like away from the monster that actually like destroyed their city like thousands of years ago, so you think that you're solving this problem, but you're actually like reliving all of this stuff and kind of like solving the mystery of like, well, where did this ancient city go?
Oh, I kind of I'm in love with this whole thing. Like, is that too complicated?
Maybe. Well, we can break it down a little bit. I think before we get too deep into that, though, I really like the idea of at the end of this thing presenting them with a choice to bring like one object back. So like, there's a flute, but there's also a violin, and there's like a tambourine, like a number of things, and it's sort of like they can take one of them with them.
A history book.
Yeah, history right, book. Like, yeah, give them that option. There's like the I'm going to totally butcher this. I think it's in Korean. Some Asian cultures, they do this like 100 days thing with babies. So they put a bunch of objects in front of a kid, and then whatever that kid chooses sort of represents their personality and what they're going to do. But I like that like you have this single choice, and it's not like you get to go back, and you couldn't even tell someone how to go get back to this. But yeah, you're going to bring something with you.
As long as we can keep it to something that can be satisfactorily resolved in like a 2-hour game session.
Yes, yes. So, this is the tricky part.
I think whatever kind of plot we come up with, let's think short story, not anything beyond. You know, right.
If it's a quest to go get like these sacred items that this culture wants to be set into the future, like if they're like, go get this stuff, it'll save us. You think, it'll save them from their doom, but it will actually just like preserve their memory. It'll preserve their culture. And we could have like, you know, class appropriate items. So no matter what your party makeup is, it's like, you know, they'll be like the flute and then the cool battle axe or shield or bow or whatever.
All right. The ancient spell book or something like that. When they bring it back, they are bringing back memory of this place. So I think that Kyle's really on it. Like, this city was destroyed. Nobody knows why it was destroyed. You go through this adventure and you come out with knowledge of this ancient culture. And that can be in the form of different objects that are class appropriate. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's right on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe some kind of like monk or archaeologist or scholar is like studying what's little left of this like site or something, and then so he's like your quest giver, and then you go down in there to go do whatever he wants you to do, and that's when you get wrapped up in the whole time travel nonsense.
Yeah, I like that.
Like, you think you're just going to get a book out of the library for him because he's a shut-in or something, or it's difficult to get and you have to try and sneak in and steal it, or some sort of pretext, but what's actually happening as soon as you step in, then you move through time.
Yeah. So one thing with that I've been thinking about, and Andy and I were actually chatting about this recently, is like, so if you're gonna, like, if you have 2 hours to do something, you really want to sort of start them at the entrance, right? Like, so I do like the idea of just like you're inside of you're in Neverwinter, and someone has told you to go to the library, and you are opening the door to the library, you know, to get this person a book, right? And that's when everything changes. Then, like, I guess, what could they encounter in there? I'm trying to think, like, okay. So the unfortunate thing is, right, if you only have a couple hours, you, like, combat's sort of an easy thing to pace versus role-playing.
Yes.
Yes. Right, so my mind is immediately like, oh, we'll just do, like, a 3-room dungeon. At the end of it, they get a cool axe, and then they leave. But I like this hook of sort of, like, there's a story element to it. But then what could they encounter inside of there that would be interesting, or like sort of what's like the final battle?
It could just be voices, right? It could be they might not interact with like actual people, right? It could be somewhat more ambiguous and mysterious than that.
Yeah, voices they don't understand.
See, I'm yes, I like that a lot. Uh-huh. It's kind of ghostly.
So as far as like what monsters to put in here, like it would be cool if it was like, I don't know, like some kind of Egyptian theme or like ancient, because I like, you know, there's mummy lords and stuff in the, it just it doesn't make any sense that there are mummies in Dungeons and Dragons, but there are. But that could be cool. And maybe like they eat like time eating jackals or something like that. Like, they'll like they do hit point damage, but you also notice like gray streaks in your hair start to form, and like facial hair grows slightly like faster, like with each bite or something like that.
I like
maybe
that.
I'm just working through COVID stuff right now. I don't know.
I think you are.
Can we distill this down?
Mm-hmm.
to like a sentence that describes what the players must do. Like, can we can we say in one or two sentences what's going on, just to put some shape around this so we can start creating some specific scenes. When the adventure starts, the players are, what are they doing? What are they stepping into? Are they looking for a book in a library?
This is a really good question, Andy, because I don't know how to describe it in two sentences. John, do you have an idea?
Well, I do have an idea. Let me throw this out there and see if it works, and you can tell me it doesn't. So the players are sent to find a book that is supposed to be lost in the vaults under this library. Mm-hmm. As soon as they step in, they're transported through time, and they are at the epicenter of the destruction of this ancient city and have to rescue the book, Battle Axe, whatever it is, before it can be destroyed. And when they grab it, they come back to their present reality. Mm-hmm. Is that a good summary?
That was good. I understand that now. I was getting a little lost in what we were doing there.
Yeah.
But maybe it's not grab it. Maybe it's kill the monster.
Yeah. What if they grab it? Like, so what if whatever... Okay, this is good a little bit more... This is going to take it in a different direction. So just an idea. So like, what if they're going to get the book, you know, Scholar has figured out that it is in the library. Like, he knows it's in the library. You have to go and get it. So they go in, they're transported to some sort of other realm. They find the book. As soon as they touch it, then it reveals like the wizard that has it under sort of control. And then you're sort of in this reverse dungeon. So you've gone into something that's pretty easy. You touch the book, and then as you're coming out, that's when all the difficulty shows up.
Oh, that could be cool. Because you could have like all of, you would see the whole dungeon,
mm-hmm.
but you could have like all of like the skeletons of the monsters you'll fight on your way out in there. So you could really foreshadow all the cool set pieces.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that a lot. Yes.
Okay.
I'm down with that. I have a question.
Yeah.
And this is where I struggle with third level D&D. How do we create a menace that is terrifying enough to destroy a building or a city that could be handled by third level adventurers?
Yeah. We will, I think, as something that like I'll do for prepping it, like we're just going to like reskin monsters, right? So we'll decide that we want a skeleton on the way in, but when you come back out, it's a vampire, and we'll just sort of like scale it. Depending on on what they are.
Okay.
Otherwise, I mean, like, we can look up, there's various things like Kobold Fight Club will give you a list of monsters that you could have in there that are appropriate to the level, but we also don't know how many people are going to be playing and stuff like that, so it's, yeah.
We could also just scale the stakes down a little bit from save the city from destruction to just, you know, get this one artifact out safely, mm-hmm. or something like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. This lost artifact.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do we want to go in this direction, or like it seems like we're all here to like, that's interesting, but if we want to try something else, that's fine too.
Oh, I think we should, run with this.
Okay.
Yep.
I like it.
Okay. So I'm hearing that we have like a couple of like nouns right now. So there's going to be some sort of NPC, some sort of location where they're going to get some sort of artifact, right? So like we've said that there's a scholar that wants you to go to the library to get a book, but it could be, you know, a priest who wants you to go to a temple to get a chalice. Like, it could be anything mm-hmm. like that. What's the most D&D version of that, or the most like, compelling?
I was thinking like the archaeologists would be able to just go themselves unless like this place is really inaccessible or something like that. Like he's too old to go down into these, you know, possibly crumbling areas. So that's why he's mm-hmm. gotten, you know, the tougher sort of folks to do this.
Yeah.
When you mentioned library at the beginning, I feel like it would be fun to, like, the idea of a library break-in or library heist, you know, would be a fun, like, opening scene. Or just challenging them to get into somewhere they're not really supposed to be, or that's, you know, off limits to them. Mm-hmm. But it's like not a dungeon; it's a living place with people in it. Sounds kind of interesting to me.
Just sort of reminds me of National Treasure, which is a terrible movie, but also a really fun movie.
It's so good, I love it.
It's like so bad. It's good. Yeah, they're just like a D&D party in that movie that just continues to get it right every time. Like, there's no setbacks.
Nice.
Okay, so like
playing that movie.
Yeah, a library heist. Yeah, to get some sort of book.
Yes, I like the idea of a book in the sort of private collection in the vault beneath the library that normal people are not allowed to access, and you have to break in and get it. That's the setup, but that's not what happens when you get inside.
Okay,
that's good. Yeah.
Private collection, and then so our NPC who's gonna like set them off on this journey. Like, do we want it to be a scholar, or do we want it to be someone who's like has a profit motive, like what, or some other motive, or is it, you know, nice and clean? Like, I'm studying this, I need that book.
You know, the nice thing about one shots is it allows you to have non-profit driven motives for adventures, right?
Yeah. Ooh,
because
nice.
In ongoing campaigns, there's a lot of, well, we need some money, or we want to get this artifact, or we want to level up, or whatever. Mm. But this, you could say your brother's scholars, and they're old, and the head scholar decided that he needed this book, and you're breaking in, or something like that. But I like it. I like to have it non-monetary.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, okay. I don't think we have to flesh it out too much. I think you could almost just see what characters people show up with if you get a bunch of roguish characters or Conan-ish characters. You know, that maybe they're there for a profit or just to see if they can do it, or I think that's something we can trust the GMs to whip up. My inclination here is that we not open with a big scene where the quest giver is like explaining what you need to do, but if there's a way we can like drop people into the action and just quickly fill them in on what they're after, I would lean in that direction based on recent game mastering experience.
I agree. Location that says, go ahead, Kyle.
I was just gonna say I agree. I think it's just as simple a thing as just like of answering, why are we doing this? Because someone asked us to. It's like you can explain all of that in the narration box and then start them at the door of the thing. It's just like that. Just, you have already agreed to this off camera. And I think as long as it's a one shot, I think most people will be fine with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've actually, this does bring up something else that I've been thinking about. Like for this, I'm thinking about asking the players to not even give their characters names. I just want them to pick like, hi, I'm Rogue. Like, hi, I'm Warrior. Like whatever their class is, like that's just who they are. With the thought being that like, it's not important that like you're village burned down and your family is you off to go live in the city, because like exactly what Kyle was saying, it's like you're doing this thing because you're supposed to be doing this thing.
I have a lot of thoughts about what you just said, but I think that's an entirely different episode.
We can
but I generally agree later. I was just like, let's just play some Dungeons and Dragons, please.
Okay,
so let's build this first scene. So what is it? So this is a public place or a private place that this thing is held in? So public library versus a nobleman's private collection or something.
I was originally thinking public library, but now that you say that, I'd be open to either.
Yeah, I think I was thinking public library too. I think it's just because of Indiana Jones came up. But
yep.
I'm kind of leaning public as well, because there needs to be some sort of librarian or like, you know, head priest NPC that you've got to sneak the book past or something like that.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and I like the idea of like the vault of forbidden books kind of being the threshold for adventure, right? Like it's like, oh, this is a library. I know how those operate. So the tension of like sound and like there's certain like social behavior. You can't just like go in there like in full plate armor necessarily. Like you got to think about it a little bit. But then once we get past this big old like spooky door, that's when we're really in that's when we've like, you know, broken through to the membrane of the actual adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I what I like that's sort of forming here is that getting the object is actually going to be somewhat trivial, right? Like but we can have it be a sort of set piece adventure. They're on the roof or by the back door or coming in through a window. They have to scale down the walls, they have to go to this secret place. You know, they have to drop into this tomb where there's no light and they have to do it subtly. And then they get the thing and they're like, "Well, that was easy." And that's when the adventure really begins. So this first part should be short and not too difficult. Now, the risk, of course, if you have the right or the wrong kind of players, is they spend an hour just trying to figure out how to get into the library.
Yes. Yeah, I think maybe we make that pretty easy, but maybe the NPC gives them the key that they need to get into something. And maybe it's like it's a hidden doorway. So like you go into the library, there's a velvet rope for the restricted section. And so they have to decide that they're going to break the rules. And then they go down a hallway and it's like the fifth stone from the top, like take this dagger, tap it three times and then slot it into another thing. And then the door opens for you.
Yeah. Can it be an illusory wall? I feel like that's a trope that never gets used in actual dungeons.
Yeah.
But it's fine because like this one you've been told exactly where it is, so it's not just like the old school like you didn't check for illusory walls.
Yeah.
Yeah, it won't be that like if you don't find it you lose the whole adventure. It's not
right,
like that.
Exactly.
It's an illusory wall, but you know where it is. Yeah, yeah. That's perfect. I love that.
Anybody else here spent like an hour and a half on a Doom level, like inching along every wall? Hitting the space bar.
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely.
It was Dark Forces for me, but yes, absolutely.
So, what if we identify like one or two NPCs in here and just like, I think we already have a good one here already with Illusory Wall, but just like a couple of features of this thing that we could expect players to, to leverage or to play with.
Mm-hmm.
So, who's an NPC? Like, there's someone else in here for sure. Who is it?
How about an attentive librarian
that
they have to distract or talk their way past? So that gives a brief role play or skill check to let them sort of get into the mode of adventure.
I cannot wait to make them like defeat some sort of evil wizard in the bowels of the library, but then still have to talk their way past the librarian when they're coming out.
That is really funny.
They're like bloody.
So what? How? What is one thing we can do or change that would like D&D-ize a library? You know, like so we all know how a library works, but we're in D&D land. So what do they levitate your scroll out to you when you ask for it? You know, like what? How can we just inject a little D&D into this library?
If it was run by spiders,
run by some sort of weird creature would be a good one.
That guy from like Spirited Away, who's like in the furnace room. He's got like six arms, and he's on like an exercise bike or something that.
Actually, I like this. Like, have there be like a human librarian you have to talk past, but the guy who gets the books is like this creature, this multi-armed creature who can zip around the library and get you anything you want.
Yeah,
he is known only as the page.
Yeah.
So is he like a creature or a race? Somebody can like remember from D&D, or is this a unique creature? And what kind of like creature from the Monster Manual or whatever would just be great at climbing around walls and getting books? Because this library doesn't have ladders, like you got to get the spider thing to go get your book from the top shelf. Right?
Now, a phase spider would be great because it could also like blink in and out of the ethereal plane or whatever.
Yes,
gigantic phase spider brings you your books.
That. You asked, Andy, and this is what you get. Yeah. Gigantic face spider librarians.
I'm so sorry I asked. Yeah. Yes, please press on, though.
No, I like that a lot. And I think it should be very clear that this is a non-violent face spider.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it just actually likes getting
books. Should have, like, a bow tie and glasses.
Yes, yeah.
It's a nerd face spider.
What does the phasing... I just have to know, why a face spider, not just, like, a giant spider? Like, is it cool, or is there, like, a library reason this thing is phasing in and out of our dimension?
I think the stacks.
Yeah, because he won't disturb the precarious, delicate old books, because he can go into a different dimension where he's not physically interacting with them.
How many patrons of the library a day have heart attacks when like a gigantic beast like materializes?
It's D&D world. Everybody knows phase spiders make the best librarians.
But that's the thing. But also, it's like he knows where all the people are. So that's another thing. It's like nobody knows that the page is a phase spider because the phase spider is never seen unless he wants to be seen, right?
Right. The books just appear in the librarian's hands as if by magic, but it's all done by a phase spider in the background.
Okay.
Okay, so we have an attentive librarian who's kind of a normal looking person, and we have a very non-normal library assistant who is a phase spider.
Yes.
Okay, a friendly one, or at least not hostile.
Like a friendly nerdy phase spider. I guess we really want to get it across that this is not the threat in this dungeon.
Yes.
Right. Again, because depending on the group, they might come in and just immediately kill the page.
Right.
I do think that we might have to title this dungeon "Phase Spiders Make the Best Librarians." <That's>,
All right. I feel like we're going to check the monster manual and learn that phase spiders have an intelligence of 2 or something like that.
Right.
That's right. Okay, the PCs, I mean, will not fail to find some weird and creative way to interact with these two characters to get access to that private vault where there's an illusory wall, and that they'll have instructions for getting into it, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what does the room look like that, if we're ready to talk about this, what does the room look like that this book or scroll or whatever is? What does this vault, hidden room look like?
So this is a good question.
I'm just curious, is this one of like many, is there like an Indiana Jones warehouse type of like hidden vaults down here? Or is this, is this like just the back hidden room?
It's funny you should mention that, Andy, because I think that wall opens up to many different timelines, depending on which key you use.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Most of them are just like a pit, like a pit that you just fall into. But I think like the scholar at the beginning has figured out the right key, the right cipher to open up the right portal or the right part of the wall.
Ah, so that's the part he figured out.
I'm thinking so it would open, but then my thought, and maybe you're not, y'all aren't thinking this, is that would open then to like the 3-room dungeon, right? And then the third room would be where the book is, and then that would set things off, and then they have to work their way back out.
Yes. Or
is that too complicated at this point? If they're like, is it the library, then the wall?
I think if it's a straight shot, like room 1, room 2, room 3, I don't think it's too complicated.
Okay.
And I think room 2 should be a trap or an obstacle, not a monster. Like room, like they get in there, and then when they pick up the object, they awaken some monster in the room they're in, right? Mm-hmm. That's room 3. Then they work backwards. They defeat that. Then they overcome an obstacle in room 2 that could be hinted at. And then in room 1 is sort of the big boss preventing them from leaving. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Or is that too straightforward? I mean, I think given the time, we got to be pretty specific.
Yeah, no,
so I've gotten a little confused. So just can we reiterate? They get to the back of the library, and they get through the illusion wall, and they're in a room where the object they want is, right?
I think what we're saying is they have to go a couple of rooms in once they get past the illusory wall to get the object.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that opens up and it just like stares down to whatever that first room is. Andy, I'm just thinking about the library level in Dark Souls. Cease Library. That's all.
Yes, that's great.
There's like this complicated in that game. There's this like really complicated series of like you have to move these stairs back and forth, all while you're getting attacked by like the hardest enemies in the game. It's terrible. It's not very fun. So yeah, but
so don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. But I mean, like that first room could just be more books, and maybe they're tantalizing books, but there's some sort of trap with them. Or maybe that's the second room. You mentioned it, like the second room might have an obstacle.
Yeah, let's have the first room just not the excitement of that room is just that they found their way into it. Mm-hmm. And then let's have the second room have something that's like a non-monster obstacle or something. Again, not really intended to be hyper deadly here, but
So going back to something.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I just want to say, so it should be easy to get in and hard to get out is what we're after, though. Is that once they're in room 3 and they trigger the sequence of events, then it's difficult.
Okay. Let's do, let's figure out, that sequence of events back out. And then I think let's go back and seed clues in the rooms as they're like going the easy path, right? So like if the second room is a bunch of books that are really tantalizing to read, like maybe they can't read them on the way in, but they can read them on the way back. Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So that first room is just going to be sort of nothing other than creepy, right?
Well, yes. Wouldn't it have like the desiccated husk of the final boss monster in it?
Well, I'm thinking we probably, but we might be more subtle with it. Like maybe it's just like a tapestry showing it.
Right. Oh, like that a lot. Like a tapestry with a manticore or whatever. Like whatever we decide the final monster is depicted in the tapestry.
Mm. Yeah. Tapestry or like, or mosaic on the ground or something that they notice. Yeah. And then when they come back in, it's like it's standing up and it's not on the ground anymore.
Right.
Okay.
I like that actually quite a bit. Because then it gives them something to worry about. Because the first thing that's going to happen when they come back out is in the second room, they're going to encounter a difficult foreshadowed thing. And then they're going to be going, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
What if they made their way through like a complicated trap that has been sprung? And then...
That's so cool.
And then on the way back, they'll have to... Like, it will be primed again, and they'll have to, like, get past it. I don't know how to do that without making it super convoluted, but if anyone has an idea.
No, I think that's cool. I think we could work through that.
My mind keeps going to the... Maybe because we're talking about Indiana Jones, but I keep going to that, dungeon at the end of The Last Crusade or something like that, where he's got a couple, like...
Yeah.
It's a couple of rooms with traps in them. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, we can talk about that.
Let's put a pin in that because I think we can come back and figure out what that trap is. But I think we should definitely do that, is have the trap be sprung and then reset.
Okay. All right. So let's start with the book room, right? So the book that they're getting, is it the only thing in there, or are there lots of things in there?
I hate to keep going back to Indiana Jones, but I feel it is a dedicated room, and just like the shield, right? At the underneath that library in The Last Crusade, there's a skeleton clutching this book, right? And when they pick up the book, that's when they do the time whammy. The skeleton either comes alive and attacks them, or becomes human again, the original owner of the book, and attacks them, or something like that. And that's the first. That's the third. Kyle's smiling. I think Kyle's got something.
No, I was just going to say Tomb of the Time Whammy is another great title.
Is there any way we could make it, while we're just like ripping off Indiana Jones, is there any way we could make it like a little tricky or interesting to pick which book it is or identify it? Or like you've chosen wisely, that sort of thing.
It could be that could be really good, because we could maybe it's like in the opening narration or whatever, like he's asked you to go get a book, but when you get down there, there's a skeleton that has a book, a scroll, and a carved tablet or something like that. So it's just
right.
And that way it's just like there's an obvious choice. You've already been given the solution, but you do have to go like, oh yeah, you know, an hour and a half ago we got that. Oh wait, it's been an hour and a half. We only have a half hour left. We're only halfway through the dungeon.
Yeah.
Well, the other thought I had, sort of riffing on that, is he says you have to find the writings of Sir Richard or whatever. Then they get down there and the writings, and there's a scroll, a tablet, and a book. Which one is what they want? Do they want them all? You know?
I like that a lot. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Like very deliberately saying the writings of, what does anything happen if they take the wrong one? If they pick up the wrong one?
We could just have the other ones vanish, and then it doesn't matter which one they picked, but they worry about it or something.
Yes, they forever worry about
psychic
it.
Psychic damage.
That is my style of jamming right there, Andy Rao. Yes. Whatever they pick is the right one. The others disappear, and the world goes whammy. So they think they made a mistake, and they worry about it, but it didn't really matter. That's
horrible.
They don't
just disappear. Players they have
out there,
to, like,
I'm sorry, I do that all the time.
Be destroyed while they're watching, just to, I don't know.
Yes.
They crumble the dust.
Yes.
Okay. A book, a scroll, and a tablet. That's mean.
Sorry.
No, that's good.
Okay, so what happens when they, whatever they, is there anything else in this room, or do we want to just make it really obvious that what the thing is that they need to interact with?
Can we talk general tone for 1 second? Because I think everything so far has been dusty and cobwebby and, you know, old, in an older style, or broken or crumbling. And as soon as it happens, everything looks sort of new, right? They've gone back in time. The book looks new. The room looks new.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever was holding the book is rejuvenated and trying to kill them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Yep. Could we, is it too much? Like, could we put in like an optional encounter with like something, just like a classic D&D thing that's living in the underground cellar? Like,
so they think it's like the challenge.
Like a rat or something. Like, again, something not intended to like meaningfully challenge them, but just to.
But a frighteningly large rat guarding the book they have to kill. Like a giant, giant rat.
I mean, yeah, it'd be cool if we could come up with like a spin on it, just so it's a little bit different. We could also nix it if because it would be a kind of a junk encounter, and that might not serve our 2-hour time limit.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, but it's nice. It's just putting in like the optional like for pacing thing. Because by the time they get to that last room, you'll definitely know how much time, like where to set that dial. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what? Yeah. So let's put an optional creature in here that the DM could spring. And what is like a seriously underused like creature that, you know, you would find on the top level of a dungeon in D&D? So like, we know about rats and spiders and like, you know, large sized insects and stuff like that. Is there something that something from the Fiend Folio that you've always wished were in more adventures?
Gibbering mouthers are CR2.
Aren't they really? Aren't those like Shoggoths or something like that?
They're like that.
Okay. All right.
Sturges. I always like sturges hanging
out. Oh, yeah.
In the arches of an old house or something.
I'm going to jot these down, and we could possibly even make a quick little random encounter table that the DM could optionally roll.
Oh. Yes.
To see more random tables.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Well, okay, yeah, so another thought would be, so you have that encounter, but then this is another sort of thing that, like, echoes what's going to happen on the way back through, right? So, like, maybe you see some rats, but then on the way back through, they're giant rats, like, something like that.
Yeah, you see a cat, but when you turn around, it's a tiger. Like, yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, but I like that, like, in that book room, there's also just... some sort of
actually thing. I like that. Yeah, I like that a lot. So it's not really a junk encounter, Andy. It's a foreshadowed encounter, but you know, they got to shoo away the rats or the dirges or the bats or whatever. And then,
okay, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Do we want to do before we do like the whole thing? Can we throw a secret room in here just for fun, like just in case someone looks for it?
Oh yeah,
like
there's got. We haven't put any treasure in here, and if we're gonna, you know, we got to get some optional treasure that. Like the PCs who can find, the ones who are going around every wall, like pushing on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like maybe just in the back of the book room, there's like a secret, a little, a loose stone, you move it away and it looks like, the construction worker back in the day had hidden some gold.
Yeah. Or a super rare book or something with monetary value that's hidden, even more hidden than this place was.
Okay. Yeah.
I like that. If it's a super rare book, then you come out and like maybe the page space spider is like yanks it out of your hands immediately. It's like, I've been looking for this for 10,000 years.
How do we know that face spider is not like stalking them like all the way through this? Like, what if it's like hanging from the wall above them, invisible this whole time? Just wondering.
Yeah, I don't know if we know that. I really don't want that thing to be a monster, though.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I want it to be a friend.
Face spiders have an intelligence of 6. They don't have any languages, but they have an intelligence of over 4, which means you can't like use like the calm animal spell on them. So they do have some cleverness about them. Yeah. I think it's more about the order of the books than it is about the contents of the books.
Yes.
It's like an order Muppet versus a chaos Muppet situation for the space spider.
Okay. So just time-wise, we are, coming up on about an hour.
Okay.
So let's, and we are at about,
so let's stock like, this thing.
Roughly design-wise, like the halfway point here. So now we got to, let's start designing the route back out of here.
Okay.
So when they take the book, tablet, etc., they, you know, the environment around them changes. Is that how you guys envision it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just say, let's decide like why does it change, and like why does it change, right? So they've taken it, and then they're going to go back in time for some reason. Like, is this right? Going back to your tomb idea, right? Is the idea that like this thing can live forever as long as no one touches the book or the writings?
Is it possible that that what you're after is like the original non-decayed version of the book, that's not musty and half the pages fell out? I don't know.
Yeah,
like I don't 100% know why this is set up the way it is, besides a wizard did this. Is should we should we try to explain like to the GM why this is all happening, or is it just a weird thing that happens? Because weird things that just happen when you touch stuff is also a D&D trope.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I like the idea that that the books or the culture or this priest like wanted to be remembered. Like he was poisoned when he was in the book room and he knew he was going to die, so he cast this weird like enchantment curse or something. As a way, like just like, oh, this, the next people that touch me might be thousands of years. They'll be able to help me, but it's already kind of too late for him. So like, he's already been poisoned by the mummified manticore sting or whatever.
Oh. I like the idea that, and it's possible, you know, that the magic has even gone somewhat awry, that this is like a somewhat unexpected, it's just created a weird, his attempt to preserve the book or something like that in his dying state, like his magic interpreted that in a weird way or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. And then you're the one that sets off the trap and everything, so that we get this cool like time loop thing.
Yeah, and the book is kind of like the stake in the vampire's heart, right? If you remove it, then things go back in time. And,
there and we go. And,
yeah.
That's a great way of conceptualizing it. Yeah.
So he's like a skeleton and he's been driven mad by you know, the poison drove him mad. So when you pick up the book, he reconstitutes and is jealously guarding his book now rather than trying to preserve it for the ages.
What if, okay, I like that. What if like, okay, so you take the book, he reconstitutes, and then he dies immediately.
Yes.
Oh.
Okay. Like, so this thing like reconstitutes and you're like, oh no. And then it like he dies. And it's like for his final breath, he put this sort of like time curse on, you know, this part of the library. Cause yeah, the manticore had stung him or whatever. All right. And then like you were then have that book. Right. And then as soon as you defeat the manticore, like then sort of the thing collapses and then you can bring out his memory. Like what you were saying earlier. Does that make sense? Like, yeah, like it's his book. It's his like his sort of journal or whatever.
He's the author. He's the guy who wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that works. So what is the so let's force ourselves to move along here and start describing the scene. We've already kind of started it. So the environment changes. You go back in time. You're in a brighter, shinier version of this room, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. When you said that, I think it was John who said that about the tone. You know, I thought of how garishly bright and colored, like, Egyptian pyramid walls are. You know, it's...
Yeah.
For such a spooky thing, they're, like, really bright and neon and illustrated. It might be fun if... I mean, this doesn't have to be an Egyptian-themed thing, but it'd be fun if this were, like, a... Just not a molded, shadowy, cobweb-filled mm-hmm. chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like it's like a like his writing room or his bedroom or a place where he used to live that the library's been built around. So maybe it jumps to life as like a living dwelling, or maybe it's his own scriptorium and there's, you know, carved walls and all that kind of stuff that that.
Maybe he was doing like magical research, so he needed to like get a room that was like away from like ley line interference or something, like how like inventors need to find like a radio silent room to do certain measurements in.
Right.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
So, how far?
It's not just gonna be like a boring box of a room. This is sort of.
It's like a dodecahedron or something. It's okay, gotta be like.
So, obviously just arcane. Thinking theme wise. So, what I don't want to go into the big like history of it, but like in a few words, what is like the theme of this like civilization that we've gone, that you are back in time? You know, is it like Mesoamerican? Mm. What is something that can guide our like mental picture of this area?
I liked the Egypt suggestion that Kyle made a while ago, that it's sort of carved walls.
It's pulpy. It's recognizable. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So something evocative of an Egyptian tomb type of, or Egyptian setting. Yes. Although this isn't really a tomb, as we just discussed.
Yeah.
It became one.
The accidental tomb. That's another title. Okay.
So the trap room is the next one.
Yeah. Not to go back to fight. I'm wondering. I wonder if we, for that, not junk fight in the book room before you go back in time. I wonder if the like creature could be something like that makes no sense in the contemporary setting of the player's world, but it's basically like a holdover from this kingdom. So like I was thinking, like, what if it's a bunch of scarab beetles or something like that? Anyway, we can flesh that out later.
Okay.
No, I like that though, but if they're small beetles that are just sort of crawling around and you're like, ew, and then when you pick up the book they become huge and swarm you.
Ooh.
And that's the first big fight.
There's like a, that could be really interesting. There's like a wizard of maggots or something like that. He's like, his body, I think it's in Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes or something like that. But like, so he got locked in here when the guy died. So you see all the bugs that are like the descendants of the things that used to make up this wizard's body. So you have to fight, you have to fight like the version of that. So that could be like a foreshadowing thing. No, I'm getting a strong veto from Chris here, I think.
I do not like it.
I think we've grossed Chris out. So, yeah.
Well, it could be beetles. Big bad beetle wizard.
Yeah.
what is if that it's called? One... Do you remember the name of that? There's a thing
big
called...
Big bad beetleborgs.
Like, you know what that's called, Kyle? What that monster is you're referring to? What's it called?
I think it's the father of maggots or something. I'll look it up.
All right. It's the worm that walks, is that ring a bell? Am I thinking Call of Cthulhu? Anyway, whatever.
That's a super cool name, whatever that is.
It is great.
This is probably too conceptual, but like, what if it's like one giant beetle when you get down there, but then when you go back in time, it's alive and it's like very clear that it's this guy's pet.
Okay.
Yeah. So you've that's cool.
Yeah.
I do like the idea that he has a weird pet that like nails that brings home the like alienness of the setting.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was also thinking of other ways. Like, it would be fun to just make this a little weird. Like, I was thinking, like, could there be like a random high tech thing in here? You know, like something that is just unexpected outside of the PC's like immediate context.
Oh yeah.
I mean, a giant pet beetle is like a good example of that. But
But like casually used magic, like light stored in globes that float in the air, that you know.
Mm-hmm.
would be really exhaustive magically now, but are trivial for this earlier civilization.
Yeah, that's a little bit what I was getting at when I was talking about what did this civilization look like. You know, is this like the first age where like magic and technology were indistinguishable and all the mages were like 50th
yes.
level?
Yes.
Like, you know, I think that could be fun to play with.
Yeah, I like that. And I think it should be very clear that like everything disintegrates when they go back to their present. Yes. You know, so as much so
they
as they want
to get all the cool floating light globes they want, but when they come back to the present, everything but the book turns to dust.
Yeah, yeah. Or they have like one use, one disconnected from their like power, so you know, something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, okay, Andy, so, you totally are right. It is called The Worm That Walks, and it's a CR12, so that might be...
Okay. That's a little much. Well, but I like this idea where you sort of see this overturned beetle husk, right?
Mm.
And you're like, what is that? And then when you pick up the book, he reconstitutes, does the thing where he comes back, sort of expositions, dies, and his beetle attacks you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first challenge.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, let's do it.
Does that make sense?
Okay. All right, so yeah, yes, you get that. Okay, so at this point, you have likely not fought anything. So then you're gonna come to that second room. So this is the one that we were calling the obstacle room. As it stands right now, it looks like we might have like one fight. Is that okay? Or do we want to have a couple?
Well, no, you got to fight the beetle, the giant beetle.
Oh, you do? That's, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was everybody else not thinking that?
You said the beetle attack, so I thought that would be a fight.
I'm still on like, I want to be the beetle's friend. It's a pet. That's where my head's
at. Well, that's a way to get out of it, though.
So what could the thing that just killed him be in here? I mean, does it have to be the end boss of the dungeon?
I think... Ooh.
Well, yeah, it could be like a summoned, it could be like a summoned snake or a summoned monster that was like sent because the final boss monster couldn't get in past the trap room or something like that. So he conjured this evil beetle into that room instead.
That actually is a super like Conan vibe you've got going on there.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, I think like beetle bodyguards, I think that does make sense, right? Okay, yeah. So there's the hus in there, and then you go back in time, and then there's one to three beetles, depending on how many people are playing, that immediately attack,
because
these things are, yeah. Like as soon as they,
when
soon
their
as the
owner
dies,
maybe they just go berserk or they revert to their, you know, animal nature.
Yeah, because he probably has them all under control.
Yes.
He's a wizard.
He's a wizard.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have an encounter with beetles, and then they survive that, hopefully, and they move into the next room. And we had kind of been chatting that this would be like the trap room, but we don't have to make it a trap room. But let's think about that. And if you recall, we had also talked about something that could have been sprung that they made their way through earlier, where if they were paying attention, maybe that would somehow help them deal with it this time.
Yeah.
Maybe what Kyle's got something.
I was gonna say, like, what if this is really putting the cards on the table, but like, what if the magical weapon that kills the beast is in its corpse when you see it? So they're naturally gonna take the cool sword and then also use it to kill the guy at the end.
Okay, I
but
like
you were
that.
Talking
that
about
no sense,
how you wanted to play it more cagey with the.
I mean, it could be in the tapestry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe the guy's dying breath is like, this is the only thing that'll kill it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and hands you hands
maybe
you a
the
dagger.
Tapestry shows the PCs, like, fighting the...
Yes.
That would be cool.
There you go.
Yeah, because they're all going to think it's going to happen, like, at the end, not when they just come straight back and it's in that room.
Right.
You could have the tapestry show one random PC who's been like beheaded or something like that, just to figure
out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll do something with the tapestry to like be a little spooky, and also maybe I think it's okay to err on the side of bluntness, you know, as far as foreshadowing goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the trap room, I was thinking of something that was a trap that could also be fought. Like when they first walk in, it seems like there's these automatons, almost like the inside of a cuckoo clock, except for they're, you know, like 9 feet tall, but they're all smashed and rusted and falling down. But when they come back, they have to work their way through this room with these sort of axes swinging at them at regular intervals. The automatons can't move off their tracks. So maybe there's just a way to get around it, or they could smash them to pieces. Like, what, you know, give them choices of how to do stuff.
That is good, because it's not just like, disarm trap, or I guess we'll die.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys, like, this is almost, I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast, actually, but, like, what makes a good trap, right? Because traps are, traps have the potential to be very dumb and boring. So what, what is the best trap you've ever seen?
Dale Kingsmill did a really great video on YouTube about traps and basically how they're almost always stupid unless... Like, so a good trap is going to automatically kill someone if they don't know the secret, because the trap needs to prove that you either belong beyond the trap or you don't belong beyond the trap. But I think something that is sufficiently dangerous looking will be fine. But as far as like the poison pinprick when you like, you know, try to pick the lock or something like that, that doesn't kill you with instant poison, that's the kind of stuff. It's just like, well, if you're going to go to the trouble of pinpricking your poison thing, like you may as well make it lethal. But this is like, you know, this is like a gauntlet of spinning automaton. I think that's a really cool way to do it.
I do like that. I think automaton. Automatons, I need to be part of this, whatever it is. So,
yeah, they're like clockwork. They're not like golems. They're just clockwork.
So, is this trap supposed to keep you from getting out of here, or like the PCs are going backwards through the trap, right? Mm-hmm. So, it needs to be something that would work, like, you know, going at it, entering it from either direction, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, this has a little bit of a feel like of a Mega Man level, where it's like, well, like, why are you, why did you do all this in your home?
It's not a trap. It's not a trap. It's a security system, right? So the security system is turned on. So it has already done its job by keeping whatever monster is waiting for you in that ultimate room away from, it's not that monster is not in the room with the Scrivener. It's doing its job, but it's also causing you a problem. Because no one knows how to turn it off.
And I do like that. I like the idea that, like, the bad guy managed to kill the Scrivener, but he couldn't get past this trap, so his quarry is dead with the book that he wanted.
Yeah,
you know, beyond the trap.
And here you have brought me exactly what I need.
maybe the bad guy is like behind all of this. Like, he reached into the future to pull heroes to help him. Okay, but what does this trap look like? Automatons, well, what do they do? Are they on like rails or tracks, or what do they do?
Yeah.
And this is where we're going to get into the hard to explain thing, that the geography, that it's going to be difficult. But if it's a square room, right? The tracks are sort of from the corners to the middle in like arcs, and the automatons can move on these arcs and stop you from getting by them, sort of like table hockey dudes.
Oh.
But with axes instead of hockey sticks.
Yeah, so they're like the mechanical cuckoo clock things, like the Bavarian clocks with like the mechanized people and stuff like that, except they're, instead of like working on, you know, like sawing logs, they're sawing you.
Yeah. Have you guys seen the movie Moon?
Yeah.
Yes. It's do you guys remember there's like a robot that is on, there's a robot assistant in the facility, and it's on a track. And the track like cleverly goes through all of the area. So like it's limited in where it can go, but the track, it can get to an awful lot of places on the track. That's what I thought, John, when you were describing.
Yeah, that's something like that. And then it sort of mirrors your moves, right? You can't just outrun it because it just goes where it blocks you wherever you go. So you've got to figure out a way to stall it or jam it or smash it or something.
So
or
is maybe there like an official way through this?
Pressure plates or something.
Yeah, so when they built it, is there like
never do that.
A way you could get through this without, you know, dodging the automatons? Is there a solution to it? Or is it just we got to brute force? Once it's turned on, the only way through is to like brute force your way through it.
Yeah, I think you have to destroy it, disarm it, or blow it up with magic. I think I like, but it's like, it's not, again, I think it's better to think of it as a security system and not a trap. Like, a trap is like something that like, oh, I didn't see that this was a thing, and now suddenly I'm being attacked for something because my passive perception is so low, you know, versus this is like, it's on, you see the danger, and you have to figure out some way to get across it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I could think of a couple ways to do it. One is you smash them. The other is you sort of interrupt the tracks, right? Mm-hmm. But maybe if you do that, there's a consequence. You get shocked or or something like that, so that even if you get around it that way, you still are using up your resources a little bit.
The ancient Egyptian third rail.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah.
The third rail of doom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's like a handful of these. I guess thinking about like actually running it, then, I mean, you're not going to track this out, like, you know, on a hex grid or something.
No, you've
got to
kind of do it abstract.
Okay. So it's very abstract. It's like you sort of tell me, maybe this is actually be a good, like, series of challenges, right? So it's like you got to come up with like three ways that you get past this thing and roll appropriately, mm-hmm. and then we can get past this. So you just almost leave it pretty open-ended, like, let's not come up with the solution, like the players need to come up with the solution.
Yes.
I'm a firm believer, not to start a different podcast episode, but I am a firm believer in, as a GM, I provide problems, not solutions.
Yeah.
Rolling automatons with axes on tracks.
I do kind of worry, though, that so what you're going to do is you're going to come in, you're going to see this cuckoo clock golem killer machine is on, and you're going to be like, well, let's just stay here and think of a plan. There needs to be some kind of ticking clock. There needs to be, some kind of countdown sequence that's causing, like, maybe there's like an earthquake or something that's like, you know, there can be evidence of like structural damage when you're walking into this place. So there's some kind of like problem that's like, oh, we need to get out of here, and we have to circumvent this security system.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
What if the walls are coming in, right? So it's the trash compactor idea.
Yeah.
So like you step in, there's automatons and it's a trash compactor. So then, I mean, like story-wise too, then when they're going through, maybe all that stuff is like bent and twisted and like smashed together.
Yes.
So like you have to get across it, you know, and like no matter what you do, that thing is going to compact in some way.
Dang it!
That feels
like a security system too.
Yeah,
it's the Final Fantasy. It's like the Final Fantasy wall monster.
Yes.
But it's two of them, and they're
yeah,
and then they smooch.
Okay, so trash compactor, automaton room
with our obstacle.
Yeah, I think like system. I am having a trouble visualizing how this works. So I think this might just be a situation where, like, hey, GM, like, play with these ideas. You know, throw something involving these ideas at the players rather than map out exactly how this works.
Well, I mean, that does really good. Like, can you, if you were given that task, do you have any idea how you would handle it sort of off the cuff? Like, or would you make it, this does sound pretty complicated.
I'd draw a picture of it. Yeah. I have a clear picture of how this would look. I think a picture of showing these two walls with big, like, you know, clubbing hands and like hammers and knives and stuff, kind of going on tracks towards one another. I think it's pretty clear.
You know, I might even challenge you to like roughly sketch this if you have a really clear picture.
Yeah,
if someone wants to volunteer to just sketch it, and then
you know how to draw,
we can
Kyle.
Surprise the players with like an actual, just like an old like school Gygaxian dungeon where you like hold up the drawing of the dungeon.
Okay. Oh, it's feelies, right? Yeah,
so they get through the trap room, and then they are,
or they die, which is okay with me. I'm just want to say
they are back the they're back in the book room where they started this. They're back in the entrance room. Yeah. So
with the tapestry,
is this where the boss is? And what does this room look like? Thousands of years ago, what's in here? What purpose would it have served? Like if this was this guy's like super private whatever scriptorium or whatever like that? What would this room have been in an original function?
What if it's one of two things? A, outside.
Oh.
Or B, just his living room, right? Like, it's like the entrance to a castle where there's a banquet table and, like, you know, like, it's the other room in his house where he would entertain. There's a kitchen. It could either be mundane or, Maybe that's boring. I don't
know. No, I like it. I think it's the place that he comes to. Maybe it's like a lecture hall. It's like the place where it's like when he goes back to his room and comes up with this cool stuff, then he comes out to this front room and tells all of his students about it or something like that.
Or what if this is just like where he lives? And then so the room into the crazy automaton trash compactor is like, I mean, that's how you get to his study, and you better be invited in there. But otherwise, like, this is where he lives, is this room.
Yeah, that works for me.
Yeah, that, or I also like the lecture hall idea, because then that gives you plenty of open space, too, for...
Yeah. To run around and fight, yeah.
Let's stick with the lecture hall. I would love to have this room evoke, like, that ancient kingdom, whatever the theme we have for the ancient kingdom. So whether that's a couple of interesting features on the room, you know, like a futuristic lighting system, you know, a few things like that that would like provide some weird flavor, and also maybe give a creative PC an idea, you know, of something that they can leverage while dealing with the bad guy.
Okay.
If it's a lecture hall, I like the idea of some sort of magical whiteboard or chalkboard, right, that you can draw and illustrate and write on. But it's not. It's ephemeral. Like,
yeah. I was thinking about like surgery theaters as a concept. So not a typical lecture hall. Like, I mean, I think like so the professor's at the front, and then there's seats and stuff past that. But more like there's some sort of center section, and then like bleachers almost on either side.
Yeah,
which give them give the players like kind of lots of stuff that they could do with that.
That would give it like an arena feel, which is kind of appealing. And could make for a pretty cool battle scene if that's what this comes
to. Yeah. Okay. So like surgery theater, does it look like this when they come in originally? Because the way we were talking, like this first room was more just there's a tapestry or a mosaic on the floor.
But I think it could.
Okay.
Either that or like, this was the public part, that would have been, it would have been raised to the ground and rebuilt, a million times while people didn't realize about the hidden stuff earlier. Right. Maybe. I mean, maybe this was just like a publicly accessible room that was just destroyed. It doesn't have to resemble, I don't know.
Yeah, but the mosaic could still be in the middle of the floor, right, to create a sense of continuity.
Yeah, that's true.
The walls are collapsed and there's rubble everywhere. And
It does need to be, recognizably the area they came in, I guess. So, all right.
Yeah.
Well, and it is behind an illusory wall at this point as well. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I was misplacing my illusionary wall. But, yeah, you're right. This would have been part of his hidden thing. So this could have, this could have survived mostly untouched, Well, I like the surgical theater idea. Maybe it is a bit much to squeeze in here. But it's like a neat idea of a scene for players to be in.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's do that. I think we're all a little hesitant to lose the good idea of the mosaic or the tapestry or something. So if we set that aside, I think it makes total sense to have this be like an arena battle room of some sort.
Could it be, if he was a scholar, could this be an actual like surgical thing? Could there be like a partially dissected like, CR12 monster?
Yeah, that would be so cool, and then there'd be a fake out because that's what they would think they would be fighting.
Yes,
we're gonna have to fight that thing that was on that table, but it turns out it was just
it's a mind flayer dissected, or a beholder or something that they totally can't handle.
And then
the tapestry was where the real creature was hidden.
Wait, okay, so going with that idea, what if it is a surgery theater, maybe. Like it's doing surgery on the wizard's doing surgery on something, and then like whatever comes out of it, that's what you end up fighting. Like like it release the mana core that was inside the beholder somehow. I don't know.
The manticore's like that, inside then, you the whole time.
Yeah, and then ended up attacking the guy, and then he ran through and, you know, grabbed his book and all that. So then you go back, like, and then when you go back to his time, right, that the big scary monster is dead, but the one that you can handle is still in that room.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that works. It will require us to pick a good pair of like monsters here that make sense together.
Yeah.
You know what I'm thinking?
This seems too complicated.
I know this isn't what we're going for, but I just think of like that moment in Doom, not to keep bringing up Doom for some reason, where like you get to the end of the level and like nailed to the walls are like the bosses from like the previous levels, and you're just like, oh my gosh, what am I about to fight?
Yeah.
Well, or
let me just pitch as a one shot. Maybe we need to keep it simple. Like there's a creature that is being dissected on the table. It's something that would be scary for them, like a minotaur or something, but they could handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And that creature is back and guarding the door.
Okay. And that's the thing that like mortally wounded the wizard.
Yes.
And made him set off this whole thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was thinking, you know, he was dissecting it or doing his studies and he was like interrupted by the bad guy trying to kill him.
Oh.
And then he fled back into his inner chamber.
Okay.
So the bad guy is out here, you know, frustratedly trying to get to him, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Then this goes back to like, Kyle, you alluded to this as sort of a joke, but maybe this is a good idea. Like, yeah, you are bringing the thing that this bad guy was after back out to him. Yeah, so it's like the book, you like you show up and it's like, I didn't want to go through that automaton trash compactor anyway, so thank you.
Yes. Yeah. And it's the guy who hired you. That's how that story went.
Yes! Oh, that's so good. It's so stupid.
It's the guy who hired you who somehow it. Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yes. For the win.
Oh, it's good.
And that's the end. Fade to black. Like, thank you, fools, for bringing me the book. Da, 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 and then you're done.
No, you give them a chance.
No.
It doesn't sound. No, I don't.
I just played a Final Fantasy game to completion, and all we have to do is have them like defeat the boss, but then a cutscene kicks in where he's actually just fine and just teleports away.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that happens so much.
Okay, so yeah, but I think the monster in the there has to be just a big boss monster here to fight. I think that's needed.
Could he resurrect like the partially dissected and therefore maybe less powerful dead thing?
Oh, so it could be like scary, but it's limited because it's only partially back.
And then you do avoid the problem of having like a bunch of PCs ganging up on one dude, which is always a recipe for like a one round battle.
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe he only does that if they don't hand over like the books or whatever. He's just like, now hand me the book.
That's it. It's the guy. They come out. It's the guy who hired them with the manticore, and he's like, thank you for bringing me the book. Now give it to me.
Yeah.
But what if he's like nice
for centuries, and then
he does? What if he's like non-threatening? What if he's like, hey, good job, thanks, this is great.
Yeah.
Complete the quest by handing me the book.
Oh.
And only
if you hand it to him,
and only if they act suspicious, then he like starts cackling like a madman and like
Or they hand it to him, and then he's just like, "Okay, my manticore friend, eliminate them."
That could be good too. That could be really good too.
Mm-hmm. So do they? Okay, so he comes back in time with them, or when you pass the automaton room, do you go forward in time?
What if he is like, what if he's, I mean, could he just be like a time traveling wizard, you know?
Yeah, he's totally like a cursed immortal, right? Like, unless he gets the book back, he can't die. And
Or what if he's just like a,
he's so trying. Yes,
What if he's just a younger version of himself?
Yeah.
Like he's just
Yeah, that's
like,
good.
I mean, he's aging slowly.
Yeah. Wizards. Like, that's totally legit in D&D.
Wizard.
He's a young his prime.
Maybe he ages in reverse. No, don't do that. That okay. would make no okay. sense. No one would guess that that was what was happening.
Yeah. No, I think what we got to do here is create this incredibly elaborate backstory for this guy that is not possible for the PCs to ever learn. So,
yes. Yes, please.
Yeah.
And that should be 90% of the writing you do on this.
Yes.
Honestly, yes. Like I've been reading a lot of the like basic modules for the basic set for Dungeons and Dragons, and that's exactly what all the backstory is. It's just like, why would anyone know this? How does it help anyone do anything? This who is this for?
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think the last thing we need is a creature.
Yeah, so is this guy, he's like a wizard, so he's got to be something a party of level 3 characters can beat. So maybe he's not like, in his early form, he's not like the ultra powerful. He's not like especially ultra powerful. Just powerful enough to
Right, because it's back in time, so he's like a third level wizard.
Yeah, so he can like raise a broken creature, you know, from the dead. But that's like kind of the extent of his powers.
Right,
yeah. Yeah, he can do that. Like, so I think if you have a level 3 wizard and then some sort of monster, like, that's a pretty... That could be deadly.
Yeah, or a level 3 cleric necromancer kind of thing.
And
yeah.
Is there a way we could... just thinking about discussions possibly with Kyle and or John about, like, good boss fights. You know, like, so what's the thing the PCs need to do that's not just, like, reduce most of these things to 0 hit points?
Yeah. What if it's destroy the book or
that's a big bargaining chip for them, yeah?
Yeah, like if you don't, we'll destroy it. I mean, what if they get through if they could just go through the wall too? And then the page phase spider would be mad that there's fighting in the library.
Yes.
So what if they do go through the wall, are they back in regular time then? Like how do they get this back to the regular time? What happens if they go through the wall? Or is the wall not passable yet?
Well, that whatever the conditions are should be the last words of the guy who dies, right? Like he should tell you, like, you have to kill him or something like that.
Yeah.
You have to kill Boom
Beazle. To get back to your own time, you have to kill the man who imprisoned me.
I do kind of like the idea of like this like quiet library, and some adventurers go back to like retrieve a book, and then like 10 minutes later they come burst out followed by an undead miniature and like a ancient wizard. Like
yes,
that's exactly the kind of party shenanigans that should happen in a library.
It
might just be the threshold, like crossing the threshold, because that would be really interesting, because then you could really have like a crazy boss fight inside. Maybe the whole library goes on lockdown or something like that. That'd be really cool.
You know, like the boss fight in the library sounds fun to me.
Yeah, it sounds fun to me too.
We could do a cool
the
library.
The face spider's trying to run around and save the books, and the austere librarian is having a freak out, and you've got to save him from being injured or her.
And if it's a magic library, like if you pull books out, like it'll give you like random magical spells that you can cast.
Oh, that would be so much fun.
Yeah, you like you knock over one of the bookcases and just like all these spells fire off.
Just random.
Like, you don't even have to read them. It's just like the books open up.
Magical mayhem. That's so good. That's why the ever so delicate face spider has to be very careful about all the books, is because if you drop them, it could cause a nuclear explosion.
Yeah.
How D&D is that?
Okay. So you go back in time. Oh, sorry. You get the book. You go back in time. You leave this place. As soon as you go through the illusory wall, like you come back to the present.
I feel like you would have to have the book or something like that to come back to the present, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So you have to have the book. They'll have the book, and they'll reemerge in. I don't know.
And if they fought and killed the wizard and the monster, then the librarian and the face spider are just thankful to have the book. Mm-hmm. If they didn't fight them, then they burst out in the huge battle in the library. So you can kind of go either way.
And yeah. And the older version of the wizard joins the fight with his younger self and the undead manticore. Oh. If you try to bypass it, then you're really screwed.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then they're going to fight over who gets the book because they're going to just fight each other.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, so that's so good.
We got to do that, but that means we got to get like the players back out to the main timeline, the present before the boss fight.
I think it's
right. We have to do something that they don't sit there and like kill the boss and then emerge and do the boring ending. I mean, I guess we could. Am I misunderstanding?
No, we don't want to do the boring.
No, ending. I think give them the option to solve the problem. Like if they want to do the boss fight in the operation theater, in the surgery theater, then they get like an easier version. But if they try to run, they're punished with a whole extra boss on top of that.
See, this doesn't sound like a punishment though. That sounds like the real cool version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if the what if it's not a surgical theater? What if it is just the small room I think we were imagining at first? And so there's not really incentive to stay in here when, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That makes sense to me.
And maybe we have to ditch the dissected body or something like that. I don't know. We can give the wizard could have another a familiar or another something else.
I mean, essentially, if we just reduce that to the illusory wall, go straight into the trapped room, go straight in. If we just cut out that room, we don't necessarily need an empty room, because now our new third room for the boss fight is the room they started in anyway.
That makes sense. So it's just the library. So you come back out. So like when you get the book, you come back out and you're in the library in the olden times, and you're met there. By, I guess like when you,
Well, no opportunity to run into the younger wizard then.
Well, the younger wizard could just be in the library up there, like waiting. Like, so he's on the other side of the illusory wall with his pet. So like the younger scholar, right? Let's call it the scholar is the one who gives you the quest and you go down like that. And then the wizard is the one who has the book. Just to get our names. So I think you come out of the illusory wall and then the scholar is like there waiting for you. Like the younger version of the scholar is there waiting for you with something that looks menacing, although it is not menacing until later, and says, give me the book. Like, thank you for getting it. Right, so like he was not able to go through the wall. Like maybe like when you come out, he's like looking around the wall, like trying to figure out how to get down there. Instead, so yeah, you come out and then you can have that like give me the book, you know. No,
I mean you're the one running this, so if it makes sense to you,
I mean it makes sense. Well, I guess I want to sell you on this as like the idea. But if it's not making sense to you...
One problem is we got really grandiose there, and now we're, like, trying to trim the grandiose down, and, you know, it's impossible not to feel like we're, like, losing a cool scene idea, you know?
I say go big.
Okay. But, like, how big?
I always say that.
Again, I think the problem is urgency, right? Like, so if there is no reason, if they think, oh, we have all the time in the world for this boss fight in this small room, if there's nothing, so if unless that situation is continuing to escalate, then there's nothing that's going to make them want to flee into the library. So yeah, you're right. Like you are. We're running the problem of we are clearly indicating here's this big boss fight, but then all of you are excited about this other completely different boss fight that is impossible to telegraph.
Yeah.
So something else, you know, that the time limit, I mean, if the city is being destroyed, you know, back in the past, I mean, we can have just like, you know, whatever, the walls are shaking or the lava is leaking in, starting to leak in and pool. Yeah, I don't know. You know, there could be some like indication of like that, you know, you're going to die. It's going to fill with smoke. It's going to collapse on you. I don't know.
If it's like a rhythmic like bombardment or something, if it sounds like, oh, it's not just an earthquake, there's something giant trying to kind of beat its way in or something like that. Mm-hmm. That could be another thing.
Oh. Yeah, I like that.
Okay, but we gotta figure out this final encounter.
Yeah.
We're not on the same page with it yet. So let's
no. Okay, I think we're not on the same page because we introduced this element of the scholar showing up as the younger self.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which really complicates it, right? So yes. We went from you go into a room that telegraphs that you're gonna have this boss fight.
Yes.
You know, because there's this cool tapestry or this mosaic or something showing you fighting this thing. And then you come back to that room. Like, so the initial idea was like you go, you come back to that room, and then that thing is there and you have to defeat it, and then you get out and end of story. Yes. Right? Like that's a pretty tight, nice little dungeon like that. The idea of like that scholar like sending you on this quest to get this thing that he needed when he was younger is like, that's really compelling though. Right?
Yes.
Like, yeah. So if you, I don't know. If we're going to do that, I'm very much in favor of just, yeah, get rid of that first room. And it's just, you meet back up in the library. But I don't know, like, I don't know if the city is being destroyed at that point.
I think it's just the old version of the city. Yeah. Well, what if the guy before he dies, who gives you the books, what if he warns you about some guy that's like, oh, beware the tattooed man or something like that. And you realize, yeah, oh, he's talking about the guy who sent us on this mission. Or mm-hmm. when the guy reaches out, it's like, you know, here's your money. His like sleeve pulls back and you see this crazy tattoo. And that's when you realize.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually like to suggest something radical here is that rather than have it be a travel through time, it's just when they take the book, the space that they're in reconstitutes, you know, and sort of resets. But when they come out of the library, they're back in their original time, and you can sort of downplay the time travel bit.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? Like the book is a linchpin that is keeping it sort of decrepit. As soon as you take it from him, he reconstitutes, dies, tells you to never give it to this guy with the tattoo on his forearm. Mm-hmm. You fight your way out, including the monster at the end, including the monster in the tapestry. And then when you get out, it's sort of like a bonus, right? Like, he reaches out to get it, and then you see the tattoo, and there's actually a fourth fight, basically.
Okay.
I think I either like that. That gives us some freedom to just pick a cool monster for them to fight, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Without having to have it be the bad guy. And then
thematic.
The GM could decide, is this, like, do I want to do this evil villain, like, thing at the end? Like, do I, you know, maybe it's an NPC that the GM can use going forward even.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or they could just fight him right there.
Okay. What's in the book such that you would not want to give it to someone that shouldn't have it? Right, like, so if the wizard doesn't want the scholar to have
time
it.
Time magic.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the generic answer is just, you know, history. Black magic of some sort, or just knowledge that mm-hmm. shouldn't fall into the wrong hands, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, then why not just like, so you just destroy the book? Like, if you have the right cleric in the party, they're just going to destroy that book immediately. Which, I mean, I guess is like that would also create conflict.
Yes.
You wouldn't necessarily know that it's. I mean, unless it's, you cast detect magic on it and it says this is necromantic magic or something. Unless it's like, there's if it's in a different language, they wouldn't be able to decipher. There would be no way of them knowing.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. the players don't have the skill to decipher the book, but this guy does.
Yeah.
Okay.
It so could in also his hands be
it's dangerous.
You know, it could also be like, you know, GM's fill in your plot hook here. You know, this book tells of the how to get into the lost, you know, temple of whatever. You know.
Mm-hmm.
It could be just a MacGuffin in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good, yeah. In the notes for the module, it just says, yeah, this is your story hook for whatever it needs to be. Okay, so the scholar tells you to go get this book. You go get the book. The wizard reconstitutes and says, under no circumstances do you give it to the scholar. And then you go through, and then the scholar meets up with you and says, "Well, give me the book." So then it's a choice by the players of like, who do you trust in this scenario?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's important, Kyle's point, that you I mean, he's the only other NPC in the thing, except for the librarian, right? Mm-hmm. So it's important that it not be obvious that it's the scholar, which may be hard to do, but you know, it should be the book can't fall into the wrong hands. You'll know the evil group because they have tattoos on the inside of their wrists or whatever. And then that's the first time you notice it. You don't even give the players a chance to see that when they first meet this guy, but they notice it at the end. I think that's important to make it work.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could tell him. You could describe him and say, like, and he's tattooed all over. And it's just, like, this cool little detail. Yeah. And then they get down there and the wizard's like, tattoo bad. Like, and then...
yeah.
You're like, oh, wait, I remember.
And maybe he just hates tattoos. He thinks they're... You know, he doesn't like them. He doesn't approve of them.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think I like this because it's a little simpler. Yeah, this might be coming at, like, you know, one hour and 50 minutes into the game and just needs to not be a huge complicated scene, I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And then it's at your discretion, right? If they've done this quickly, then you can make a scene with the this NPC, and if they haven't, then you can sort of wrap it up.
Yeah. I guess just for our sake, and again, maybe this is just up to the DM, whose side are we on? Are we on the scholar's side or the wizard's side?
I would like to be on the scholar's side. Well, I'd like to be on the wizard's side.
Okay.
I kind of like the idea that they're both like Conan-esque, you know, wizards that
never trust people. Scholars.
Like, you know, they're this is just, they have a rivalry or something like that going on, and one of them is trying to pull you in. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. So it's just like, neither of them are very good, and probably the right answer would be to just destroy the book, because none of them should have it.
Right. This is not info that probably needs to go in there, but you know, the book could also be something that's just of like personal importance to one or both of them, you know, like someone's love letters to the other one's wife or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So then what is in, so we just need to decide on that third room then. So like what is the monster that they face? And I guess, is it a tapestry? Is it a mosaic?
I like it that it's a mosaic. I like that it's a tapestry. And I think we had sort of the poisoning idea, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it has to be something that can poison. So this is my attempt to pitch my favorite monster, the manticore.
I agree.
But else that could poison would also be okay.
I'm okay with the manticore.
I'm good with manticores, yeah.
Basilisk manticore. Is also level 3, so it could be a petrification thing.
Well,
phase spiders also have poison.
The phase spider all along.
Of course it was.
The phase spider materializes and you see its tattoos.
Yes, yeah. Okay, so the tapestry depicts like these heroes defeating a manticore inside of this room.
Yes.
And if they look closely, they realize that it's them in there.
Yes.
Okay. That it's them. With the manticore.
Yeah, so they go.
Okay. All right. So they go down tapestry. There's the room with the smashed automatons, the book room. They get the writings. He reconstitutes. The automatons are there. They defeat the manticore, they come back through the wall, and then they're in the library and the scholar is asking for the book. And then at that point, they can kind of decide on give it to them, destroy it, you know, phase spider's like, oh, there's my book. You know, like whatever ends up needing to happen there, with kind of the optional battle of like, they could just attack the scholar at that point.
Perfect.
That sounds great.
I love it.
I like it. So, Chris,
when you say it like that, it seems like it shouldn't have taken us that long.
So, Chris is going to run this, right? So in the next couple week or two, a few weeks, we'll rustle up some players that aren't Kyle, John, or myself, and see what happens, right? And we'll see how much you have to change it once you start running it, because you'll realize partway through it makes no sense and it's not runnable. That's usually how I...
But that's what you get for coming up with an adventure in an hour and a half.
That's right.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, I'll take some time, and I'm going to be writing this up to you a little bit, so I'm sure it'll change. And then we'll probably just, like, drop the mana core fight, because there's no time. All right. Well, we should really wrap up. Thank you all for doing this. This was super fun. I'm really looking forward to running it. So let's see. This is going to go live, I think, on Christmas Eve is the hope. So if you're listening to this and you celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas. And then, we'll do the actual play of it sometime in the week or so after that, and probably to kick off the new year.